This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 40 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And only for the month of January, earn up to $550 extra when you sell with The RealReal. That's right, up to $550 extra. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn up to $550 extra this month at TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
This episode was recorded for my UK column show. Please keep us independent by going to support.ukcolumn.org.
This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
For the first time on my UK column show, Catherine Austin-Fitz, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Oh, thank you. And I'm so glad you're working with UK column. That is such a great group of people and great website and great content. So I think, you know, to me, we always have to move forward working towards the world we want to live in.
So when you talk about the criminal enterprise, actually, what do you mean by that, Catherine?
So actually, the criminal enterprise is that portion of the central banking warfare leadership that runs the organized crime side of the house. So, you know, so anybody who operates with systemic lawbreaking or gives themselves sovereign immunity, you know, so they proceed to break laws with sovereign immunity, but...
So if I'm following correctly, you argue that the entire executive with its congressional and legal wing are just broken.
So I wouldn't say it's just broken because if you look at the infrastructure, there are many good people in there. And if you look at the laws, there's many excellent laws and process. So if you look at the constitutional and legal infrastructure of the United States, there's a great deal of good stuff there and to be admired. And you have a small group of good people, both in the civil service and in the Congress, who are still doing amazing things. And, you know, thank God for them. Now, if you say the whole thing's broken, that tells me you're a person who's never been to a country where everything's really broken. Because if you have, then you know, we still have a very serious tradition of law and courts arguing under the law that we are each individually accountable for our own actions and requiring a process where you can't be found guilty unless evidence is put that proves you're guilty. Okay. I've been in countries where it's the rule of the mob. And if you're part of the pink polka dot people, you get killed, right? You're accountable for something your ancestors did two generations ago, right? So,
but you argue that the key constitutional provisions for what do you call it, financial oversight, those are being abused and ignored and circumvented.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely, and part of it is, you know, we've been running a country. Where we've re-engineered the mechanisms, I call it the financial coup, so that you have a whole world of operations that have to be kept secret, and it makes it very difficult to interact with the general population because they don't understand what's going on, why it's going on, or exists. That's number one. But number two, because technology and events are speeding up, it's very difficult to get the mechanism to work at the speed you need it to. Right. So you have a leadership that has one map of the world, a general population that has another map of the world. That makes it very cumbersome. And then you have a mechanism that's not designed to live in a world with this kind of speed and technology. And if you look, for example, at how quickly China is going on technology and innovation, you know, the leadership is very frustrated because they're falling behind and they want to catch up. And the question is how.
You speak about something called Article 1, Section 9, Clause 7, and how it's violated. Now, I'm not an American. Would you mind just expanding on that?
So I think what you're referring is to the constitutional requirement that all expenditure has to be envisioned in an appropriation by Congress and then disclosed. So it says Congress has to review and approve before money can be spent, and then after it's spent, you have to report what you spent.
But $21 trillion has apparently been spent.
Oh, well, here's the thing. We have no idea how much has disappeared. We have government documents saying that they have $21 trillion of undocumentable adjustments. But then they adopted an administrative policy that said they could keep things secret after fiscal 2015. So we have no idea. We from 2015 on, that's 10 years. We have no idea what else has gone missing.
But, I mean, Catherine, $21 trillion, I'm just trying to wrap my head around that. I mean, what does it even mean? It just sounds like a number.
No, it's not a number. If you woke up tomorrow and found that there was $21,000 missing from your bank account, would that be meaningful to you?
Yeah, okay. That's meaningful, yeah.
Okay. So this is the equivalent. So if you look at the amount that was loaned or given or went missing during the financial crisis, and then the $21 trillion, and then the $5 trillion injection. Let's just take that $50 trillion. You're talking about, approximately 150,000 per person in America, okay? So imagine 150,000 missing from your net worth statement, from your balance sheet, your bank account. And just think of that for everybody. If everybody, you're missing 150,000 and everybody else is missing 150,000.
So where has that gone? Do you know?
So we can engage in a tremendous amount of conjecture about where it could go. But I think what's important to understand, if you and I, wait a minute, I'm just going to have to do this. So let's say you had a company, okay? And you wanted to bring in all new systems for your company. Okay, so let's say you were on Microsoft and you said, you know, I want to go all Linux. So I'm going to get all Linux servers and I'm going to get all Linux laptops. And so what you would normally do is you would bring up your new system and test it and make sure it was working before you took down your old system, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So think of it like that. So I decide in 1995 during the budget deal that the system just won't work. So what I do is I start to bring up a new, well, I've been bringing up a new system all along on the covert side. At the budget deal, I think they said, we give up. And that's what the head of the largest pension fund told me. He said, they've given up on the country. They're moving all the money out. So what you do is you start moving as much money out of the old system to the new system, right? Because you don't want the old system to go bankrupt with all the assets and money in it. You want to shift that over to a new system, right? So in the old system, you've basically created a century of promises to your population on health care and retirement and pension. And so what you want to do is you want to move all the assets out to the new system, but then you want the old system to have a liability from itself. So the way you get the population to shift into a state of financial responsibility is you have their asset in their pension funds be the debt owed by them. So they, as citizens, owe a debt to support their health care and their pension funds, which is a debt from the government, which is supported by the taxpayer. So you move all the assets out, and you leave with them with the liability of taking care of themselves. Do you see how that works? Okay.
Right.
Okay. And then once you've got all the assets out, you bring down the old system. Right?
Ah, hence CBDCs.
Right. So how are you going to run the? How are you going to collapse the old system? Well, you end currency and you put them in a total control grid.
With tokenization.
Well, with tokenization and programmable money. So stable coins or CBDC is programmable transactions. and ACID tokens can be made, you know, integrated as programmable as well. So whether it's programmable assets or programmable money, you switch the financial system out of a currency system into a control grid. Right.
And that and that's precisely what the head of the BIS was saying, that with that in place, you can then enforce control of everybody's spending.
Right. But let's go back to the coup d'etat. What is the coup d'etat? So in 1913, we implemented and then launched in 1914 the Federal Reserve System. Okay. And once that system was launched, the bankers controlled monetary policy. They took monetary policy back from the legislature. So instead of the legislature, the Congress, controlling monetary and fiscal policy, the bankers controlled monetary policy and the people's representatives controlled fiscal policy. Okay. Now what they're saying is, with new technology, we don't need a Congress and we don't need an executive branch. We, the bankers, can make all the rules and implement it through the financial transaction system. So the coup is the bankers saying, that's it. We want taxation without representation, and we want to make all the rules and implement them through the money. So now the bankers are going to run monetary and fiscal policy. Now, you may leave the legislature up there as theater or entertainment or to keep everybody dumb. But what you're saying is, we control the money. We can set taxes because we can just take it out of your bank account. And if you don't do what we say, we can limit your money, change your money, freeze your money, you know, and take all your money.
And that's what going direct is.
The going direct part is, it refers to the way the reset was engineered, which is, instead of the Fed putting money out on the reserve track to expand the economy or to loosen the money supply, they injected money directly. So going direct is about, you know, directly injecting money. So during the pandemic, they injected $5 trillion, and there's several pieces up on Solera that explain the whole thing. Now, you could argue that going direct means you put out CBDCs and you don't need banks because the central bank can do all the financial transactions. Now, as a practical matter, because the Fed system is 12 wholesale banks, you know, those banks are not going to want to deal directly with retail. So they, you know, they would leave up some kind of retail capacity, whether through the existing banking system or fintech or something else.
On the face of it, though, it sounds good. You know, the central bank is going directly to you as a consumer.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more, and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 40 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And only for the month of January, earn up to $550 extra when you sell with The RealReal. That's right, up to $550 extra. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn up to $550 extra this month at TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
So I think some people will think it will be good because they think, oh, well, it's safe. I can't, you know, my bank won't go bankrupt and there'll be a bailout or a bail-in and I'll lose my deposits, you know, or the FDIC will go bankrupt. Of course, that's all just, you know, intellectual confetti. So, you know, it's just flack to confuse you. The reality is, the central bank is not going to allow you to go direct to use them as your banker. They are now going to take away all of your discretion, in the worst case, to do anything financially. They're going to tell you where you can go, what you can do, what you can buy, who you can buy it from. Now, will they exercise all those powers? It depends. But you're talking about a slavery system.
Yeah.
One, it's not a currency. I mean, I call it a control grid, but it's a slavery system. Because if I mandate, oh, you have to take a vaccine a month, or I turn off your money, then unless you have a way to feed yourself outside the system, you're going to starve or freeze.
Now, the going direct reset was agreed upon in 2019. I mean, most people don't know this.
Well, it was reviewed. The G7 bankers meet once a year at the through the auspices of the Kansas City Fed in Jackson Hole. And they reviewed a plan prepared by a group of the top retired central bankers called the Going Direct plan. And if you know, we wrote a major wrap up on Going Direct and a summary as well by John Titus and did an interview. It's all up at Solari. And I just put at the top of my Twitter feed, I just pinned all the key links for all the money that's disappeared, including the $5 trillion. It didn't technically disappear because that was a publicly announced plan. You know, and the $29 trillion was an announced plan, too, although, you know, to get together and add it all up, you know, it takes real work to add it up. And then the $21 trillion was buried in the financial documents. So, again, this is all central bank and government documents. So, but at the Going Direct link, you can see you know, we put a link to the PDF that the BlackRock Institute produced of the Going Direct plan.
Yeah, and what's interesting, as you note, is that the whole COVID thing was a clever deflection.
Well, no, it was more than a clever deflection, because if I give you $5 trillion to go buy up the monopoly board, that's half of the play. But the other half of the play is, what can I do dramatically reduce the prices you have to pay with your $5 trillion, right? So the pandemic is how I shut down all the small business and farms and put them in a squeeze place so you can go in and buy cheap, right? So $5 trillion without the pandemic would have to pay a lot more than if they're all their income is shut off, they're in the corner and, you know, need to sell to get money.
Yeah, and this was the biggest asset transfer in history.
Oh, it's extraordinary. I mean, you created more than 500 new billionaires. Apparently, we just had it on Money Markets last night. John Titus and I went over this. Oxfam has a new report. In the first year of Trump, the billionaires' wealth went up, I think, 18%. Somebody just announced that the Trump's net worth since the inauguration is up $1.4 billion. I mean, these guys are having a field day, right? But, in the United States, for example, 35% of the small businesses went under or were shut down. In San Francisco, it was 49%. So, you know, what you did was you first shut down, you know, small business and farms. You know, you pumped money into the part of the economy where people in the know are going to make a fortune. And just look at Congress. When the Congress insider traded the whole thing, look how much. I don't know if you've ever seen that little chart that shows the difference between Nancy Pelosi's stock market performance and Warren Buffett. I mean, she just kills Buffett. Buffett can't touch her. Okay. But the other thing is you injected, you know, everybody but the people in the know and Solari Report subscribers were injected with something that has created, you know, the death rate. I don't know South Africa or Europe, but the death rate in the United States, you're talking about probably up to a million deaths or half a million to a million deaths. And I think the latest disability number is 5 million or so. But extraordinary rise in all-cause mortality and disability rates. So in all those families, then the older generation dies and they drop the capital down. But if you look at the impact, if you take the family wealth of the people who own small business and small farms or work in that economy, you know, between poisoning them and shutting down their businesses, you destroyed church congregations, you destroyed families, you destroyed. So the civic and family infrastructure was torn apart in addition to shutting down their income. So, you know, it was, think of this as war and as a tactic to, if you want to take over the enemy and get their assets cheap and keep them in the dark. It was highly successful.
Is Trump an asset to the Fed?
So right now in the United States, you have, and Europe, but in the G7, you have different factions. So you have what I'd call today the Carney faction, who believes in globalization. You have Trump and his faction, and they're much more into, you know, let's make North America strong. So you have real factions with real policy disagreements, right? But they all believe in oligarchy and in central control. And if they're arguing about anything, it's who gets to control what, right? Because now the real estate is very fluid and being renegotiated across the planet. But I would say, you know, they all are firmly committed to oligarchy and central control, but they have very profound differences. So now Trump is running an operation that is completely financially dependent on the Fed. So he's got $6 trillion a year of expenses in the federal government and $4 trillion of tax revenue and other kinds of revenues. And the rest is he's got a $2 trillion or more deficit. Right. So how's he going to get that money? He's totally dependent on the bankers.
Last year, he promoted something called Stargate.
So the control grid has a hardware and telecommunications infrastructure, right? So you have the satellites, Starlink, and you have, and of course, we have the GPS and other satellites. You have the local hardware, the telecom towers, Flock, and other kinds of surveillance cameras and tools. And then you have the telecommunications that integrates all of that and gets it to communicate with each other. That whole hardware and software infrastructure is the physical plant that supports the data flows, whether you're doing surveillance or, you know, messing with somebody's payment systems, right? So if you look at the control grid, to me, there are three essential parts, and there are many other parts, but one is the digital ID. So I know that you're you and I'm me, and it's interoperable globally. The second is programmable money. I need to be able to turn your money on and off and do that, you know. And then I need the hardware and software infrastructure, and that includes the data centers. And the data centers and the energy and water that they use is a big part of what's coming up. So now the question we all have, and I believe, is that Operation Warp Speed was about what I call the Internet of Bodies, getting the ingredients into your body so we can essentially hook you up to the system.
Which makes Elon an asset.
Well, I would say it makes Elon a liability. So, so I've never, as you know, my attitude is somebody wants to push mesh network in the back of my head, they're not my friend. So I've never been a big Elon Musk operation fan, because I don't think there's one Elon Musk. I think it's all operation. But anyway, but no, he wants to put a mesh network in the back of your head and hook you up to his satellites. Now, you know, what's interesting is I think the Western leadership has been very enthusiastic about its ability to control because of the Starlink network. And what we just saw was Iran shut down the Starlink network to everybody's shock and amazement, stopping, you know, the Israelis and America was planning on doing their next war in Iran, and the Starlink shutdown stopped it. And everybody's trying to figure out, was it a Russian system or a Chinese system? What exactly did they do? How did they do it? But I keep pointing out, you know, the Iranian average IQ is 107. The Chinese average IQ is 107. And the American average IQ now is down to 98. So, no, but if you look at the engineering capacity of Japan, Russia, China, and Iran, no, Iran, China, Russia, Japan, all together. You know, one of the biggest questions the Trump administration faces is how are we going to keep up? Because if you look at the tracking of important technology, critical for national security, we are falling way behind.
What's interesting, though, is that the answer is you keep up with sanctions, tariffs, and military might. That is effectively what Trump is doing.
So Trump came in, and the dollar system was losing market share. And the dollar strategy, or the neocon strategy to preserve dollar dominance, had been to implode Russia again in the Ukraine and use Russian resources to maintain hegemony. So I call that the, you know, the East-West strategy. That strategy has not worked yet. You know, clearly there are many people who haven't given up on it. But in the meantime, Trump is looking and saying, okay, how do I create the resources I need? One, because the world's changing. So the Arctic Circle is now critical, both for national security and economic and other reasons.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more, and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 40 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And only for the month of January, earn up to $550 extra when you sell with The RealReal. That's right, up to $550 extra. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn up to $550 extra this month at TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
Reasons and energy reasons. And so, you know, I can't wait any longer. But I can't go east-west, so I'm going to go north-south. So now I want Greenland, I want Alberta, I want the Panama Canal, I want all the way down to Antarctica, you know, so I'm going to go north-south. And what he's been trying to do since the inauguration is trying to implement a north-south plan, and that's what we see him doing over in Davos is, you know, forcefully trying to implement a north-south plan because he's trying to get the dollar back to a resource rational kind of self-sufficiency. Now, if you look at the style that he's using to do it, it's undercutting the dollar dominance seriously in many other ways. So it's
what could possibly go wrong, Catherine?
So there are many different things that could go wrong. And I think the question is, what are the things that Mr. Global is worried about going wrong that we don't know about? Okay. So what are the geophysical risks that keep Mr. Global up at night? Why is Mr. Global trying to go to a complete central control grid? You know, why is he doing this? It's a lot of work. It's a lot of energy. It's a lot of money, you know, and it appears that Mr. Global is absolutely dedicated to depopulation. So yeah. So why is Mr. Global trying to depopulate, and why is Mr. Global trying to go to a complete control grid? Now, there are many possible explanations, but I think the first thing anybody listening to this needs to understand is certainly in the United States leadership is very deeply committed to depopulation. And you need to know that because you need to outwit their plan. You know, the way you get them to fail is one person outwits at a time. And as each person in each family outwits and organizes to outwit, it makes it harder and harder for them to succeed. But right now, their greatest accomplishment or accomplice in implementing what I call the great poisoning is the people themselves. They're going along with it. You know, they're facilitating it. So, you know, Mr. Global is marketing 20 different addictions, but we're embracing 20 different addictions and, you know, and implementing them. So I think the first thing you need to do is understand they want total central control and they want depopulation. So I don't know if you ever, we keep showing this on our quarterly and annual wrap-ups. We'll have a series of video clips. And I don't know if you've ever had a chance to go in and go through our video clips.
Yeah.
They're hysterical. But one of my favorites is Jared Kushner, after he left the administration, said he gave this interview and he's explaining why he's going to be the last generation to not live forever or the first generation to live forever. And that's why he's going to the gym and taking better care of himself because he's planning on living forever. And And, you know, he's explaining this seriously, because if you look at the, you know, incredible technological developments that have occurred over the last 50 years, if you're in the know and you know about them, it gives you a very different perspective than if you're not in the know. So when Trump talks at Davos about, you know, our economy is amazing and we're going to grow, and if you've seen the numbers, it's off the charts, it's unbelievable. You know, meantime, you know, if you look at the states that have the highest percent of 90-day delinquencies on credit cards, the lowest state in the country, the lowest delinquency rate, 90 days delinquent on credit cards, the lowest rate is in Florida, 14%. The highest rate is in Alabama, 37%. 37% of the credit cards in Alabama are 90 days delinquent or more. Okay, so while Trump is talking about this amazing economy, you know, the people on the ground are like, are you nuts? But that's because they don't understand the, you know, what's coming out of the lab and what's possible.
Whenever we have a discussion like this, invariably somebody sends me a message saying, okay, but Bitcoin is the way out. It's decentralized.
Mr. Horrible's going to make you another shiny toy out of thin air, and that's the way out. Right. What can I do? I can't, you know.
But I mean, what do you think? Do you think that cryptocurrency was basically just a mechanism?
Cryptocurrency is a prototype to get the whole planet engaged in prototyping programmable money. Crypto is designed, an all digital, and the problem is in crypto. Crypto could be wonderful. So I remember when I first discovered digital money and what we could do with the internet, and I invented something called just-in-time money. And I was, you know, the world was going to be totally abundant. I was so enthusiastic about what's possible. So I understand why anybody would discover crypto and see the possibilities. But the possibilities in a free world with intelligent governance that is in alignment with you culturally and emotionally is completely different than when you're governed by a group of people who are running a secret operation and want to kill you. Okay, it's a different world. So, but a 100% digital financial system is the end. It's slavery. And so you can't go all digital. So whatever you're doing, you need to rebalance and build your analog. Okay, especially because if you don't want to be a slave, you may have to go 100% analog. I hope that never happens, but it could. Okay, so crypto was basically a prototype to figure out how to do programmable money on scale, because you want to get all the young people and all the freedom fighters inventing for you. And you can't go to them and say, I want programmable money, I want to hire you and pay you a lot of money to figure out how to run a slavery and build a slavery system. They're not going to do that. But if you say, oh, here's this new shiny toy and it's going to make you free and blah, 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 blah. Now, along the way, your main thing is a prototype, but along the way you find all these other functions. So Bitcoin has been a great pump and dump tool, and it's been a great way of transferring money quietly behind the scenes. You know, because of that, you know, when the intelligence agencies use it to transfer money, you know, sometimes it means the young freedom fighters think, oh, I can do that too. Well, good luck with that, because, you know, as we can see, it's not secure, it's not safe, it's not, and they're planning on building the, you know, they're planning on doing a lot more seizure. So seizing Bitcoin has become remarkably easy. Now, you know, there are lots of wonderful Bitcoin people who've made a lot of money on Bitcoin who think we can do this all with self-custody wallets. You know, I'm not saying that won't work for a time, but ultimately as a on-scale system, you can't solve a governance problem with a financial product. Right. So we don't have a financial problem. We have a governance problem, and you have to solve the governance problem. And if you don't solve the governance problem, changing the finance, you know, I hear people say, oh, if we stop debt basing the money, that will fix everything. No, if you've got a secret governance system that wants you dead, you know, it would be helpful not to have a debt based currency, but that won't fix the governance problem. So this is not a financial problem, and you can't solve the governance problem by changing a financial product or reengineering the financial system.
But how do you fix the governance problem?
So there are literally thousands of ways to do it. And it's not one thing. There's no magic bullet. It has taken thousands of years to evolve this system, and it's going to take a long time to get it out. So we have a new or a revised publication of our thing called Coming Clean. Think of this as having a system that has a parasite. You, if you had a tapeworm in your body, you would know exactly what to do. Oh, I have a tapeworm. I need to detox and get rid of the tapeworm, right? It's the same thing with Mr. Global's extraction of your wealth from you, okay? So what you need to do is you need to go through your life, how you spend your time and how your money, and you need to delete the tapeworm, okay? You need to move the tapeworm out, and so that what you're doing in your life, you know, whether it's what you eat, who you associate with, where you bank, is good for you as opposed to good for the tapeworm. So the way a tapeworm works in your body is it injects into you a chemical that makes you crave what's good for the tapeworm and you know, instead of good for yourself. So let me give you an example. I was looking a few years ago at the grocers list for independent grocers, and over the prior 6 months, the independent grocers had sold $2 billion of fruits and vegetables. They had sold $10 billion of carbonated soft drinks. Okay? If you look at that list of food, I don't know what this sugar component was, but basically all of that sugar and all of the carbonated drinks, you know, billions and billions and billions, were being purchased by the people who were being poisoned. In other words, they were embracing. If you look at illegal narcotics, you know, excess alcohol, sugar, gambling, pornography, you know, on and on and on. If you run down all the addictions, you know, we are killing ourselves, right? So, and we have the power to come clean and change that. And so, but here's what's interesting. The more you change and do act in what is to your own interest and network and work with people who are acting in your own interest, you deny the parasite the energy. Because remember, the parasite's making money on all these things. The parasite's making money drugging you. The parasite's making money doping you. The parasite's, you know, making money poisoning you. You know, you have the ability to say, no, I'm going to reverse that. So, and now, if you go through people's investments, we're all financing the control grid. The average American, if I got out their 401k and IRA and their retirement accounts, what I could prove to them is the majority of their money was going to finance a company who was depopulating them or trying to control them completely and turn them into a slave. Now, you know, I'll get in front of these audiences of 1,000 people and somebody will say, what are you doing to stop the control grid? And I'm like, I'm doing everything I can think of, but I got 1,000 people in front of me who are all putting all their money into their retirement accounts and giving it to the guys who are building the control grid. What do you want me to do? I'm having a war with you. You're trying to build the control grid. You're financing it. You're going to work. You're building it. What is it you want me to do?
That's a hard, tough pull to swallow, because you're asking people to hold up a mirror.
You know something? Let me explain where we are in America. So I'm just going to speak about America. When it was clear that we had a serious problem of the government dealing drugs or running the money outside the law, you know, every year from 1985 on, there's been somebody highlighting what's going on and somebody trying to do about it, including in Congress. And the American people have made it very clear, as long as I'm getting my check, I don't care. Okay? So if you've ever watched my little 3-minute story, everybody can find it on YouTube, of the red button problem. You know, if you look, there's been a small dedicated group of people in Congress, in the civil service, you know, in the business community, all over the country, who've been trying to turn the red button green. And the majority of Americans said, no, as long as I'm getting my check, I don't care. Okay? So there's going to be no exit from our situation without looking in the mirror. Mm-hmm. Because now since they can't keep the red button up, what they're doing is they're depopulating you.
You haven't said anything about fiat.
So what I would say is the thing that makes the current system what they would call slavery is debt basing and secrecy, okay? And the failure of their elected representatives to require, you know, to get obey the law. So you have lawlessness, you have debt basing, and you have secrecy, okay? The problem is not that the currency is fiat. Because what I will tell you is, if you go back through history, if you read Alexander Del Mar, the most effective currencies in the world are fiat currencies that are well-governed. Mm. We have a debt-based fiat currency that is not well-governed, in my opinion. But it could be. Now, remember, there has been almost no support in the general population for managing it responsibly. Everybody was like, no, don't manage it responsibly. Get me my check. And if that means you're irresponsible, that's okay. I want my check. But you are not going to fix this situation by going to gold and silver. You're going to make it much worse. Because while we've done this sort of hear no evil, see no evil, you know, speak no evil for 30 years, the central bankers have accumulated all the gold. So now that they have all the gold, you're going to tell me we're going to go to a gold system? Are you out of your mind? Because now they've got the gold, and if you start a gold transaction system, now you need gold from them, and they've got you over a barrel, right? And what are you going to do to get gold? You're going to have to sell your land. You're going to have to sell your kids. You're going to have to sell real assets to get their gold, right? Why would you do that? Why would you create, you know, you're dependent on your enemy now. You're going to increase your dependency on your enemy now? You're out of your mind. Okay, that's not a sound money system, especially because they want to make it digital. And so they're going to have fiat gold, which is even, I mean, if you think fiat is bad, where do you see fiat gold when they own all the gold? So, you know, what we want is we want a fiat system and we want it with, you know, lawful and no secrecy or minimal secrecy. You're going to have some secrecy and a good governance system. Can we get there? Of course we can get there. But we can't get there if you have an entire population that is absolutely committed to corrupt short-term behavior. You know.
And the president, therefore, is just a placeholder.
The president is running a position. He's running a government that doesn't have information sovereignty and financial sovereignty. So he needs to have a coalition of sufficient financial information or financial strength and intelligence to get something done. Right? But he doesn't. I mean, let's go back to 1963. What happened in 1963? The military, the intelligence agencies, and the Secret Service teamed up and assassinated the president in broad daylight. Okay? So the Secret Service guns turn out and they turn in, right? So he's surrounded by people with guns who don't necessarily work for him, right? And he's having to deliver $6 trillion of checks when he only has revenues of $4 trillion and he needs to get the rest from the bankers.
Mm. Oh, it's okay? A tight situation.
Yeah. Mm. Right. So remember, you know, you walk into the Oval Office, you sit down, and everybody in America wants their check. Right? How are you going to get the money to give them their check? Everybody's lobbying you. That's why Tim Dillon, this is one of my favorite clips from two wrap-ups ago. Tim Dillon says, in America under Trump, America is, and he's thinking, America is, he says, an auction. An auction. So here's the thing. If they've got all the money out into this new system and they're going to bring down the system, I mean, it looks to me like they're trying to break up the United States.
We had some tech gremlins that have cut into our time, and I know you have a tight schedule and you have to go. Leave me with a parting thought.
So what is so remarkable about our current situation is that there are profound reasons for optimism. So if you look at the technologies that is available, it's astonishing. So when Trump gets all excited about, you know, it's amazing what we have. You know, there's real there behind that. That's not just, you know, that's not just marketing. There's real there. So if you look at the technology we have, first of all, we're sitting on one of the most beautiful planets you can imagine. Okay. So we've got great real estate. That's why they're fighting. Whenever anybody tells me, oh, the magnetic pole shift is coming, we're all going to die. It's like, well, why are the private equity guys killing each other to get a hold of it? You know, if we're all going to die and it's not going to be there. Okay. So we have this beautiful planet. We have unbelievable technology that we could integrate in wonderful ways. And if you look at what is possible, if we ran things, you know, if we grew up in a spiritual and culture way and ran things the way they could be run, the wealth possibilities are unbelievable, Germ. When I first did a simulation of the wealth possibilities, if we just stopped the tyrannical central control and the waste that comes from it, the waste that comes from the secrecy, I couldn't believe it. The guy I had calculated for me, the simulation, he kept coming back with the numbers, and I kept saying, that's impossible. That's impossible. And he said, finally, he said, look, I'm right. You got to take my numbers and check it over the weekend. So I spent all weekend, and I realized, oh, my God, the price of tyranny is so expensive. It's so expensive to our, you know, our hearts and our minds and our pocketbook and our just you cannot imagine how much tyranny is draining from our lives and the possibilities of what we can do. I mean, we are so dumbed down and constrained, and the wealth that's being extracted is just off the charts. Anyway, so there is no reason not to have an abundant life and a civilized life on this planet. But it means 8 billion people are going to have to practice the golden rule. And so far, they don't want to, and I can't make them. And I would say my powers of persuasion have not made a big dent, but I will never give up doing it. So we have to have a culture and a spiritual consciousness which is as powerful as the technology that we now have access to. Okay, there's an imbalance between our emotional maturity and our spiritual and intellectual maturity and the power of our technology. So we have to grow up. And in theory, if we were to do that, I mean, heaven on earth. There's no reason that I know of. And I think if anyone was to say, well, what does that mean to me? I would get a copy of Come and Clean. The PDF is free. If you want to buy copies, you can buy them from the store, but you can also print it out and make your own. And I would get a copy of Come Clean, and I would start looking about what you can do to start denying energy to the parasite and start finding and gathering people who are not psychopaths. About, you know, depending on who you read, 2-5% of the population is comes into this planet without the capacity for empathy. And we need a way to deal with those people other than putting them in charge. But first you need to understand, no, they're not like you. They're not like you. You've got people who are, you know, they are not capable of empathy, and they're very good at finding each other and organizing to take advantage of other people. And if you look at what they're up to right now, you know, their intention is to kill a lot of us. And you know, we need to not let them. That's the responsible adult thing to do. You know, when you have children running around doing terrible things, you need to, as a responsible adult, you need to not let them do that. So anyway, so that's my advice.
All right, Catherine, my audience, how can they follow you?
solari.com, S-O-L-A-R-I. We'd love to have you as a subscriber. We have a free newsletter. We have a ton of resources. We do monthly legislative briefings to try and help people, you know, because the next thing after I clean the tapeworm out of my life and family is, okay, I've got to get together with my local, regional, and state leadership and clean them out of the, you know, of our tax money too. So there are many, you know, there are thousands of actions you can take, and we've written them up again and again and again and again. We keep writing them up, so you can find lots at solari.com.